following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. We're going to talk men's college lacrosse, men's college basketball, and the Stanley Cup playoffs in this edition of the podcast. Derek Whitaford, the head coach of the Union men's lacrosse team, will join me. We'll talk about this weekend's second and third rounds of the NCAA Division III men's lacrosse tournament. Union is hosting at Frank Bailey Field. Union will take on Stevenson at 3 p.m. on Saturday. We'll talk about that game coming up. And if Union wins, they'll advance to the third round on Sunday. Jerry McNamara, the new Siena men's basketball coach, took some time out from his busy schedule to join me. We chat about his hiring and what his philosophy is. So Jerry will be on segment two. And then we'll talk Stanley Cup playoff action with NHL analyst Pierre Maguire. And I'll have my picks later on for round two. I did excellent in my round one picks. I went 8-for-8. So that doesn't happen very often. So I was very proud of myself. So, well, coming up, Derek Whitaford, the Union men's lacrosse coach, will join me. We'll talk about making the NCAA tournament and Union hosting this weekend, second and third rounds. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Union College men's hockey head coach Josh Hoge. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Union College men's lacrosse team begins its quest for an NCAA Division III tournament title as they'll host the second and third rounds of the NCAA Division III tournament. It's beginning Saturday. They'll host Stevenson at 3 p.m. on Saturday. The 12 noon game on Saturday will feature Tufts against either Illinois Wesleyan or Aurora. That game is being played Wednesday, so they'll find out on Wednesday who Tufts' opponent is. The winners of Saturday's second-round games will meet in the third round Sunday at 3 o'clock at Frank Bailey Field. Union coming off a tough loss to RIT in the Liberty League semifinals last Friday, but they're looking forward to getting going here in the postseason. I had a chance to talk with Union men's head lacrosse coach Derek Whitaford on Tuesday at Frank Bailey Field, and here's my conversation with him. Well, Derek, how much are you looking forward to this weekend hosting the NCAA Men's Division III second and third round of the tournament here in lacrosse?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for us. You know, this is the third year we've been able to host in a row, which I believe, to my knowledge, is a school record. And we're super excited to get another home game, another week together with this group, and, you know, hopefully advance.
Were you surprised that you got the home game?
Yeah, a little surprised, but, you know, we had the same situation last year. So, you know, you hope for the best, expect the worst. And now we're here at home, and things couldn't have been better.
Yeah. Of course, you're coming off that tough loss to RIT last Friday. It was a 10-2 game after the first quarter. What did you tell the guys after the game, and how do you get this out of your mind as you get set for Saturday against Stevenson?
It's in the past. So, you know, that doesn't matter anymore. We didn't win the Liberty League championship like we wanted to, but we got an NCAA bid, a Pool C bid, and now it's a whole new season. So we just flushed that game, and it's focused on the present right now.
What do you know about Stevenson?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. This is the first time I think we've ever played Stevenson, to my knowledge. And, you know, I know they have a great coach over there on the opposing sideline, and they got some talented, you know, grad students and seniors, but also have a good mix of freshmen that are playing a lot. So, you know, we're going to take a deep dive into their games and their schedule and see what they're about, their personnel. But it's going to be a great challenge for sure.
What do you think the key is going to be on Saturday? I mean, how important is to take have control of that game from the get-go?
Yeah, it's going to be about playing Union Lacrosse when things don't go our way, not spiraling, and sticking to the plan. And fighting back, because they're going to score some goals, and they're going to get some stops defensively, and how do we handle that is going to be important, especially on a 2-day, you know, if we win, we advance.
Yeah. How would you have assessed the season so far? I mean, you guys got off to a good start, then you faced Tufts, who's going to be here this weekend for the tournament. That was a tough loss there, but how would you assess the season from the start to now?
I think we had a really solid season. We lost 5 games to the top 4 teams in the country, or to the top 5 teams in the country. So, you know, we got to tighten some things up. We've tried to use those games as learning experiences. And now we're here right now, and that's as best we could do, and we got to keep moving forward. So, as I said, it's a great opportunity here to be in the NCAAs, and this is our goal. So we're super excited to be here, and, you know, I think this team has a lot of potential still.
Who stood out for you this year?
Matty Pilato at the X has been fantastic, giving us the ball, giving us opportunities, getting our defense a rest. But I mean, our short stick defensive midi play has been very good. John Sewell just got named first team All Liberty League, which is fantastic. And our attack has been deep, you know, and defensively has been stout at times. So I think from top to bottom, we've been playing pretty solid. It's just we got to play 60 minutes of lacrosse.
How important is it to take advantage of being on your home field this weekend to win this the second and third round games and then head to the next round?
Yeah, it's familiar. So, you know, we get to stay in our routine, stay in our field, stay in our locker room, stay in our beds, which is an advantage. So, you know, we're going to take everything that those advantages give to us. And I forget the rest of the question.
I mean, just being able to be home and just you take advantage of the whole situation and try to advance to the next round after the Sunday.
Yeah. So it's these back-to-backs are dog fights, are rock fights. So being at home helps a little bit.
Yeah, you don't normally you just be maybe 2 games a week at the most. You don't play back-to-backs. So I mean, how different is that to preparing for that?
It's a lot of work on the coaches' ends, I'll tell you that. Doing the scouting reports for 3 different teams, you know, in case one team advances. And I'll tell you, I've messed that one up before in past years, assuming a team's going to win, and they didn't. So, you know, you really got to prepare for 3 teams in 2 days. And, you know, you always want to assume you're going to win. But really, you got to put all your eggs in the first game, Stevenson, who's a real good opponent. Because if you don't beat Stevenson, you're not playing the next day.
Yeah.
So it's all about Stevenson right now.
Yeah, Tufts has a first-round bye. They're awaiting the winner of Aurora and Illinois Wesleyan. Do you play Tufts earlier this season? I know coaches don't like to look ahead, but what are the Tufts makes them so tough?
I mean, they faced off well. Really, they're an offensive juggernaut, and you know, really do some really interesting stuff on offense, playing fast and playing in the gray area. But defensively, the past 2 times we played them, they've been really stout. So, you know, us kind of getting our feet on the offensive end, putting in some goals and kind of giving our defense a break because they're all gas all the time.
So we sit here on Tuesday. The weather's nice. You open for good weather this weekend?
I hope so. But it looks like rain, but that's fine. That's Union Lacrosse weather.
Oh, speaking of rain, I mean, you had to deal with that against Clarkson in the opening round of the Liberty League tournament. And there was a long delay dealing with that. What was that like, and what did you learn from it?
Hey, well, we actually had to deal with a similar rain delay last year, or maybe 2 years ago in the NCAAs. So, you know, we relied on our own experiences that we had 2 years ago in the NCAAs, and being at home helped. So, again, if there's some rain delays, I think that's another advantage we might have.
Yeah. Well, Derek, good luck this weekend.
Hey, thanks a lot.
That's Derek Witherford. Coming up, I'll talk with new Siena men's basketball coach Jerry McNamara. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Hi, I'm Daily Gazette news columnist Andrew Waite and host of the Weighing In podcast. which takes you inside my award-winning featured news column by offering the backstory, thought process, and interviews that inform my work. Plus, readers have their chance to respond. The Weighing In podcast is available at dailygazette.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette sports writer Mike McAdam. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. On March 29th, Jerry McNamara was named the head coach of the Siena men's basketball team, and he has been on the go ever since as he reshapes the roster after the Saints went 4-28, which led to the dismissal of head coach Carmen Massarella. And Jerry is taking a quick break to join me now here on the podcast. Jerry, welcome and congratulations on becoming the Saints coach. How are you, and how have you had any time to breathe since you took over?
This is one of my first times. I appreciate that. Right after Final Four week, the schedule opened up where we were allowed to have visits that Friday. We did 13 straight days of a kid being on campus. I think it was 9 kids over 13 days. And, the last few weeks, just, a couple housekeeping things and getting ready for the summertime. We've got, you've seen some of the commits that we've got. There's a few more coming out, and we're pretty close to feeling like we have a competitive roster going into the summer. So, now the next few weeks for us, the guys are gone. They're finished with their finals. A couple guys are staying. And, my staff and myself, we're going to settle in. And, there's a lot of things that factor in. You got to go get the gear in place and get the housing in order and have these guys ready to roll when they get back on campus.
And maybe for you personally, moving from Syracuse to the Albany area, that's got to also be on your mind.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing on my mind. Obviously it's tough when you make this move, and I've got to be here and be present and, run the day-to-day. And, the biggest thing is my kids are still in school, which is the hard part for me, working, basically Sunday to Friday night and, getting to see them Saturdays and a little bit of Sundays. And, that's been the adjustment. As far as settling in, it's been great. It has. Everywhere I've gone, there's just been positive energy. We've been in a lot of different places and a lot of different businesses in terms of going to dinner and going to lunch and getting breakfast and taking guys around town. So as we're taking visits and showing these guys town, I'm learning town a little bit too. And it's just been such a seamless transition because the people have been so warm and receptive to my coming in this area, my staff. And there's a buzz and excitement, and we feel it and we appreciate it.
I mean, obviously the Siena fan base is very loyal, very enthusiastic. Maybe to a fault, maybe over enthusiastic sometimes, but you've had a chance to talk to the fans. It seems like it's been a lot of positive feedback so far.
Yeah, there always is when you haven't lost a game yet. it's a little bit simpler when I haven't lost yet. And, I think anytime there's a transition, there's some excitement in it. And I'd like to think that the excitement now is based on what we've done. It's about the production and how we've recruited and the people and players we're putting in place, I think, are suited to win right away. And I know there's, like I said, there's the excitement in the transition, but we're more proud of what we've done since we've got it. It's been a while since I've done any media obligation stuff because I know what was most important, and that was the roster. Mm-hmm. And I put all that stuff kind of on the back burner and got to work. And I'm just really, really grateful for the staff I have in place and the kids that believe in the vision that we're trying to create here. And it's that time where, all the worry and all the worry that I had in terms of roster retention and build is gone now. And now it's about the excitement of getting these guys here and getting to work.
Yeah. How enjoyable has it been for you to put together a team that you're going to be running?
I'll tell you what was really enjoyable is how efficient we were. We didn't waste any time. I think we targeted the right guys. Guys that we believed in, guys that we developed relationships with. And that's been the really exciting part, is feeling like, you're everyone obviously creates the vision, and it comes down, can you execute? And we executed. And that's the most exciting thing right now. There's a lot of worry in that because there's uncertainty, and we turned that uncertainty into certainty and got the guys we thought we needed and added pieces in the backcourt, pieces on the wing, and added a couple big guys too. So, all that worry and fear in terms of having a true team in place by the summertime is gone now. And that's the thing I'm most excited about is having a team in place.
What attracted you to the job?
Oh, I mean, you name it. You know, I've come from obviously a place where the support is incredible. There's a history, there's a tradition. And leaving and being a part of that, leaving something like that, you have to have a duplicate. And I thought that this place matched everything in terms of what I was looking for, of getting an opportunity to be a head coach. Did I have support of the people around the community and the program? Do they show up to games and support it? They do. Do I have a great practice facility? I do. Do I have great people in the building? I do. And can you match the venue in terms of where you play against anybody in the country? We do. You know, so incredible fan support, the right facilities, incredible playing venue. You know, but the most important thing of all that is the support and the tradition. And, you know, Coach Bayon said it at Syracuse, you know, regardless of what he did individually as a coach, it was always the fans. It was the people that continued to show up and support the players that make a great program. And now it's my job as the head coach to create a great product and create new fans and people that support this place. This place has all the ingredients to win.
How has recruiting changed over the years, especially with the transfer portal and the name, image, and likeness?
Drastically.
Does it make it harder?
You know, that varies. I think the biggest issue I have with all this, and I don't know if it's an issue at this point because I've become accustomed to it, the biggest, you know, problem or, you know, not regret, but just the thing that hurts me the most about it is the days of the development process of having a guy that grinds it out for 2 years and then maybe playing as a junior and being a great player as a senior. You know, you're just probably not going to get that anymore. There's very few guys that you're going to coach for four straight seasons. You know, I value that in coaching because it's about people. It's about relationships. It's never going to stop being about that for me. You know, but NIL, there's multiple factors that have taken place over the years. You know, obviously the first one was the transfer portal, and then they poured gasoline on that fire with NIL, then COVID, and now fifth-year players, and then they opened it up to you can transfer to wherever, whenever you want. So it wasn't just a one-time, you know, penalty-free transfer rule, and now you can transfer everywhere. And there's very few conversations you're going to have in terms of recruiting that don't come down to eventually a question asked about NIL. So there's just a lot of varying factors. And again, I think this, regardless of all those factors at play, the most important thing to me comes down to the vision, the opportunity, and the relationship you create with these guys. And we're in a position where we do have a collective in place, and we do have people that support this program, and the Siena fan base is strong and proud, and you know, we're in a position where we can compete with people at our level, and we can compete with high-level players because of my staff and myself developing, creating relationships over all these years, and having the reputation as far as being good people that treat kids the right way, and that's going to put you in place more often than not, and then the vision and opportunity is going to play a huge factor, and then of course, that last question is going to come. And when it comes to that question, you just got to make sure that you're someplace where you can remain competitive.
Yeah. One player you did recruit from the portal is Amsterdam native Marcus Jackson, the brother of UConn standout and current Milwaukee Bucks player Andre Jackson. And Marcus is coming from UAlbany, which should make the rivalry between the two schools even more interesting. What do you like about Marcus?
Everything. You know, obviously I recruited Andre really, really hard at Syracuse and got a chance to know their family. And, you know, I laughed. I told Andre the story. He was in the gym yesterday, came by to see us. And I told him when I called your mother, I said, Trish, I'm not trying to go 0-2. I missed out on Dre. I'm not missing out on Marcus. And, you know, I just love the way he competes. I've always loved his intensity. You know, let's take talent out of the way because we know he's talented. You know, there's certain separating factors when it comes to players. And I just love his competitive nature. He's just, you know, I love guys that at the end of the day, the only thing that matters to them is winning. And they judge themselves on that thing alone. Did I win or lose? And that's the standard I'm going to hold myself to. And I've just got a great appreciation for Marcus because he does everything inside those lines that impact the ultimate factor, which is to win the game. And he doesn't care if he scores 5 points or 25 points, and it's 3 steals or 8 steals. It's all about what can I do to help the team. And then you add on that fact that he is a good talented player. You look at his production numbers at UAlbany and the minutes he played, how efficient he was. But it's the winning attributes. It's the eyes. You know, it's from that guard position, you need guys with those killer eyes. And the kid competes to win, and I just love that about him.
Yeah. You mentioned Jim Boeheim. You played for him. You were a coach for him. What did you learn from him?
A lot. I learned, you know, he could take the most complicated issue and simplify it. He never got too high, too low. I think the consistency over the years from playing for him, from working with him, being in the meetings with him every day, and, just how consistent he was. He believed in what his system was, and he stuck to it. He was able to, I've watched offensively over, 19 seasons of, literally every position being his best player, the 1 through the 5, and how he manipulated his offensive system to cater to that individual. So I've seen that dynamic of it. I've seen adjustments defensively of what he did with the 2-3 zone. Just so many different things. But the biggest thing I take from Coach Boeheim is what he created in terms of a family atmosphere of the players that he coached. It's what I try to do. I try to be a good person to the kids that I work with. Spend the time with them to, respect is a two-way street, and the way you do that is you earn it. The way I earn it is spending time with these guys, being in the gym with them, talking to them off the court. Those are the things that Coach probably didn't get enough credit for in his tenure, because I think people saw a certain character when he was on the sidelines that didn't necessarily fit who he was as a person off the court amongst the people that love him and played and worked for him. So just creating that environment of family, people feeling proud of what they did there, coming back and supporting it. Those are all the things that I admire the most about him, and something that, of all the things as a head coach, I want to basically duplicate what he's done there.
What kind of team do you want to have at Siena?
Competitive, relentless, a group of selfless competitors, guys that judge themselves on result. They never evaluate how they play inside that 40 minutes. They evaluate the performance after the game. If you could be that guy, you have short-term memory, because there's always going to be a next play to impact the game. Too many guys hang their head. I want a group that's resilient and tough, and they're so competitive that they can get over a mistake. You make a mistake, I'm going to hunt you down and try to get it back. I'm going to do everything defensively in the next possession to make up for the mistake I made on the offensive possession. I'm going to be efficient on the offensive side of the ball. And just the mature respect characteristics that come with winning are the guys that I want to coach. That's what product I want to put on the court. The analogy that I use with the guys that I've recruited to come into this situation and the vision that I'm trying to create is when I close my computer after every game, I want to say the same thing. I'm proud of that group. They gave me everything they got. And any coach that's in this and sits at this desk in this seat, when you close your computer after you analyze and evaluate the performance of your team, the thing that's important above all else is, did they give me everything they got? That's the most important thing for me, is I got a group that's going to fight.
One of the assistant coaches you hired is Ben Lee, who was an assistant at Washington. Lee is no stranger to the Capital Region, having played at Union College from 2015 to 2019 and helping them win consecutive Liberty League titles. What do you like about Ben?
Everything except when I have to sit next to him when he's watching a Knicks playoff game. All of a sudden, his decibel level goes up quite a few. Starts screaming at the television. So it concerns me what sideline demeanor is going to be behind me this year. You know what I'm saying? So, no, he's terrific. The thing I love about Ben is he's very similar to me in terms of how he thinks as far as player development, recruiting side of things. We've got a very, very similar vision, but he's a grinder. I love his background in terms of player, but then, made hoops and grinds it out on the grassroots level and gets a chance to know a lot of different people, understands the business. I believe was the youngest Power 5 assistant coach in the country last year. I like the fact that he worked with Mike Hopkins, who was one of my mentors. Not not that that played a huge factor because I have my own relationship with Ben, but the fact that I know a guy that I trust as much as anybody in this business also was like, Mac, he's the man, he's a stud, he works his tail off. Those are all the attributes that I'm looking for in a coach, a guy that understands the recruiting side, can step on the court and grind it out with the guys, and within that whole process, he's going to treat them right and be there for them. And, you know, he's been terrific from the time that I made that first call to him and we had that first initial conversation before everything was in place. And, he's been grinding it out with me. We're staying in a 2-bedroom apartment, him and Ryan Bury, my ops guy. Ryan Bury sleeping on an air mattress, and those guys have been kind of rock stars for me behind the scenes in this whole stretch.
Yeah. Well, the NBA playoffs are dead to me since my Sixers got eliminated by the Knicks. Speaking of...
Don't talk to Ben about it.
No, I won't. Well, finally, we are both Pennsylvania natives. I grew up in Philadelphia. You are from Scranton. What was life like growing up in Scranton?
It was great. You know, typical middle-class family. You know, both parents, postal workers. My father, the plant manager in the Scranton region, you know, had everything that I ever needed. Two hard-working, blue-collar parents. The youngest of, you know, four I was. And, you know, as my mom likes to call me, the baby, you know. So I got spoiled a little bit, but couldn't have grown up in a better neighborhood and had better childhood friends and better siblings, and really just very, very lucky to have the parents I have, how supportive they were and driving my rear end all over the place. And, 4 years of college at Syracuse, they never missed a game, home and road. You know, just kind of paved the way for me in terms of what it means to be a parent, what it means for me to how I want to be a father, who I want to be in terms of how my kids look at me. And, you know, if I can look at my kids could look at me halfway the same way I look at my parents, I hopefully have done a pretty darn good job.
Yeah, you won a state title, I think, in 2002, right?
Yeah, we did. I lost the state title in my first 2 years of high school, my freshman and sophomore year. We lost in the state championship. My junior year, we lost in the state semifinal. So, you know, I've always said that the losing drove me and made me a better player. You know, I went into every offseason, my freshman, sophomore, and junior year like an animal. You know, frustrated and angry, you know, fighting to win a state championship. And, I thought it was pretty vital in terms of the development. You know, it drove me, the losing drove me. I didn't want to feel that again. I wanted to get on top. And, it's kind of who I've always been.
All right. Well, Jerry, appreciate you taking some time away from your busy schedule, and we'll talk right before the season.
Sounds good. Appreciate you taking the time with me.
All right. That's Jerry McNamara. We're going to talk some Stanley Cup playoffs next. Round two's on the way. Pierre Maguire, NHL hockey analyst, will join me to talk about that. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Hi, this is 4-time Stanley Cup champion and New York State Hockey Hall of Famer John Tinelli. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and the second round of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs got underway Sunday with the Rangers beating Carolina, and to talk about the second round and look back at the first round is our good friend, hockey analyst Pierre Maguire. Pierre, welcome back to the podcast, and I think I got all my picks right, which is rare for me to happen. What was your take on the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
It was really good. It was very competitive, Ken, and it's really nice to visit with you and your listeners. I got one of mine wrong. Out of the eight, I was 7 out of 8. I got Winnipeg and Colorado wrong. I thought Colorado's goaltending would be an issue with Gorgiev. It was not an issue after game one. In fact, the goaltending in Winnipeg was an issue. Yeah. So I got 7 out of 8 right, so I'll cede you the victory. But that was one of the things that was startling to me, was that Connor Hellebuck was not better in the Winnipeg goal. So that was one of the things that stood out to me. The second thing was at how easily Edmonton dispatched LA, and I think that is probably cause for concern in Los Angeles. I'm also a little surprised at how long it took Vancouver to knock out Nashville, but I give Andrew Burnett, the new coach in Nashville, and the new general manager, Barry Trotz, a lot of credit for that. And in the East, I was really surprised that Toronto was able to extend Boston to a seventh game. Honestly, Boston should have won that series in five games. You think about Charlie Coyle in the third period of game five, rifling one off the crossbar and the post at the same time. If that goes in, the series is over. And, you know, the pain and suffering in Toronto could have ended there. They had to prolong it just a little bit longer. So those were some of the things that really stood out to me in the first round.
Yeah, the one thing we mentioned, Vancouver-Nashville series, how does Vancouver win the Pacific Division? Because they looked like they had trouble scoring goals. I mean, they ended up with just 13 goals. They gave up 12 in that series. To me, I just like, I don't know. Maybe it's a throwback to the neutral zone trap era with Vancouver?
Possibly, but here's what I would say. They were so concerned about one line for Nashville, and that line was Philip Forsberg, Gustav Nyquist, and Ryan O'Reilly, and they knew that if that line didn't score, there was no way Nashville could beat them. So if you look at the series, most of the goals or points came from that line if they weren't getting offense from their defense. Carey, in one game that Nashville won both their goals, they won 2-1, both their goals came from defensemen, Roman Josi in the power play, and Alex Carrier in a 5-on-5 situation. So they did their job paying attention to that top line. But here's what I think really affected Vancouver. Elias Pettersson had a bad series. He really had a bad series, Ken. And because of that, he's such an important player for them offensively. They never got in rhythm. You could just see the whole team was discombobulated offensively. They better be better. No pun intended, yeah, when they play Edmonton, because if they're not better, that'll be a very short series with Edmonton.
Yeah, you mentioned the Maple Leafs. I mean, to extend Boston 7 without Austin Matthews in the lineup, that to me was impressive. You know, Matthews did play in Game 7. He was hurt. He was ill. But where do the Maple Leafs go from here? I mean, I know as we talk here on Monday, are there changes you think in store for them?
It pains me to say that because I've been fired before in the National Hockey League, and it's never a pleasant call to receive. So you don't wish it on anybody. If you've been in the league, as you know, I've been fortunate to be in the league over three decades. It's my 34th year around the NHL. So you never like to see that happen to anybody. But I do think there'll be some changes made in Toronto. I don't think I'm the only person that feels that way. I think part of it will be player personnel. I think part of it may be at the management level. Not sure how deep that'll go. And I do think there'll be some coaching changes. How deep that goes, I don't know.
Of course, there is going to be a coaching change in Winnipeg. Apparently, Rick Bonus is announcing his retirement. He's been around a long time. I remember him back when I was covering the AHL, him coaching in the American Hockey League. What about Rick's career in hockey?
I worked with Rick in Ottawa back in the infancy days. I also coached against him in the 1992 Eastern Conference Final, Boston versus Pittsburgh and Hartford versus Ottawa. So I coached against Rick a lot back in the day, and I've always respected him as a person. I've always respected him as a professional. He's extremely thorough in his preparation, had an amazing career. The only obviously downside to him was, you know, not winning the Stanley Cup over all those years and how close he came as an assistant in Vancouver in 2011, how close he came in Tampa Bay in 2015, you know, losing to Chicago. There were so many instances where they were so close when he was part of a group and they couldn't get over the top. Same thing with Dallas. So, you know, great career, unbelievable career. Just the only blemish I would say is just not having won the Stanley Cup, but an amazing career.
Yeah. Well, let's look ahead to the second round series. Let's start in the East with the Rangers and Carolina. As I mentioned, they got underway Sunday afternoon, Rangers winning 4-3. Peter Laviolette going against the man who was his captain for the Stanley Cup champion in 2006 of the Carolina Hurricanes, Rob Brind'Amour. How do you see that series? Special teams were, you know, played a key role in that game on Sunday.
Ken, I was surprised. I've seen Carolina play a lot, and I've known Rod a long time. I was surprised at how disciplined the Carolina Hurricanes were in game one. Thought the Rangers were full values. Zibanejad was fantastic. Obviously, Panarin and Trocheck played tremendous roles offensively in that game as well. Shesterkin came up with some timely saves and goals. So it was all positive for the Rangers. I was really surprised at how undisciplined, both on the penalty kill when it came to taking penalties and on the power play and faceoff play, Carolina was. I think there'll be huge adjustments going into game two. I know that on Monday, Carolina had a full practice at the New Jersey Devils practice facility, so that probably no Ranger spies could be there. But I would say that it's going to be very interesting to watch game two. The one caveat to all I said just now, you're never in trouble in a playoff series, Ken, until you lose on home ice. So even if Carolina were to go down 0-2, until they lose in Carolina, I don't think they're out of the series at all.
Yeah, because we saw the kind of comeback they had in game two against the Islanders, you know, down 3-0 on home ice, coming back to win that game 5-3. So, I mean, this Carolina team has a lot of, great strength, and they don't get down on themselves.
No, that's really fair. That starts around Jordan Staal, who's a Selke Trophy nominee as the best defensive forward in the National Hockey League. It goes to Jordan Martinuk, who's a tremendous leader and a heart-in-his-sleeve type of player. Jacob Slavin on defense is just a phenomenal human being and a Lady Byng Award candidate, which is a hard award to win as a defenseman who plays in matchup situations. That's for the most gentlemanly player in the league. So you can, that's a tough award to win when you're that guy, and he's already won it once. So there's a lot to like there in terms of leadership in Carolina. To me, the biggest thing, I was shocked by what happened in game one. I have not seen that from Carolina, where they just really melted down. And I do think they'll be better, but the Rangers are for real, Ken. They really are. They're for real, and they're tough to beat.
Yeah, and then that other East series is a rematch of last year's first round series between Florida and Boston. This time, Florida has home ice advantage and may be considered the favorite in this one. You know, they've had some time off after taking out Tampa Bay in five games, and of course, Boston coming off the emotional overtime win on Saturday. How do you see this series? I mean, do we see another Florida victory against Boston?
I don't like to predict winners or losers, but here's what I would say: Boston really showed me a lot by not panicking in game seven against Toronto, especially after they fell behind 1-0. Boston's a tough out. There's still guys in that team that can play better, and they've got some real good goaltending. Obviously, Swayman was phenomenal throughout that entire series. My concern for them is Florida has had almost a full week to rest and rehabilitate after what was a very difficult, even though it was only five games, very difficult series with Tampa. It was physical, it was emotional, it was hard, but Florida's had this time to re-energize. I think that's going to be a problem for the Bruins, who won a very hard game seven Saturday night and had to fly to Florida on Sunday to play Monday night. Game one, I think, will be difficult for the Bruins, but if the Bruins ever stole game one, this series is a toss-up. But if the Bruins don't steal game one, they will be chasing the series, and it becomes really hard for them.
How much is Florida going to miss Sam Bennett? Because I guess he's going to be out at least for the foreseeable future at this point.
Yeah, I've been told that he'll miss the game tonight. They do miss him. It's a great point by you, Ken. He brings a certain element of physicality and nastiness that you have to have in the playoffs. The good news for Florida, though, is Sasha Barkov has been outstanding all playoff long. They've got more than enough firepower. They've got real good depth on defense. And they have an identity. And that identity is ground and pound. Get the puck in deep, get after your defense, and cycle and really wear you out. If the Bruins can take that forecheck cycle game away from Florida, that'll be positive, especially without Bennett being in the lineup. But if they can't and Bennett's not in the lineup, that's a huge problem for Boston.
Of course, Florida has strong goaltending in Bobrovsky too. So, I mean, that's going to be a good goaltending series.
Great point well said by you. The Bobrovsky has been an amazing reclamation project when you really think about it. You know, 2 years ago, everybody's like, what's he doing here? We're paying him $10 million a year. He can't stop anything. And what people forget, Ken, and I know you don't, but this is for the fans. Last year, when the playoffs started and they were playing the Boston Bruins in the first round, they were an 8 seed and Boston was a 1 seed. Alex Lyon started the playoffs for Florida in goal.
Yep.
He's now the goalie for the Detroit Red Wings. Bobrovsky came in the last half of that series, stole the series, and eventually got the Florida Panthers into the Stanley Cup final, you know, where they eventually lost to Vegas. But if you look at the way Bobrovsky's played this entire year, it's been phenomenal. So a little tip of the hat to Robbie Tallis, who's the goalie coach down there, Roberto Luongo, and his brother, because the Luongo brothers and Robbie Tallis have gotten Sergei Bobrovsky back on track, which is really important for Florida.
Well, let's head over to the Western Conference, and Dallas coming off the emotional series of victory over the defending Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights will take on sorry, I'm losing my train of
thought. Colorado.
Oh, thank
Colorado.
You, Colorado. Thank you. Yeah, I lost my train of thought there for a second. I mean, to me, I think we watched Colorado just basically destroyed Winnipeg. They had so much offense that the Avalanche, yeah, I think the Stars are in some trouble here.
They could be in big trouble, and they have a real good team. You know, I look at their team, and you see Jake Ottinger in goal. You see Miro Heiskanen on defense. You see the addition of Chris Tanev and what he's done for Dallas. You see Wyatt Johnston and the offensive capability. You see Jason Robertson and the offensive capability. You see the depth players they've accumulated. They've got all these great components there, but they just came out of a hellacious series with Vegas, and you got to think a lot of guys got nicked up. Meanwhile, Colorado basically had their way with Winnipeg after losing game one. They swept them and won four straight, and they got out of that series real early without a lot of physical damage. So this could be a big issue for Dallas, just the wear and tear, and battles of attrition matter in the playoffs, and that's why it's so important to get out of series early if you can. Dallas has just been through an unbelievable battle of attrition, and Colorado basically has not.
Yeah, I just how do you stop McKinnon? How do you stop McCarr? I mean, that's a great offense. I mean, I'm going to have Colorado winning a series. I like the way they're playing right now.
They're playing great, and you know, everybody was wondering, they're kind of scratching their head, what's Joe Sakic and his management team doing in Colorado when they're adding Yakov Trenin, who came over from Nashville, big physical body who needs a contract, and Brandon Duhaime from Minnesota, big physical body who needs a contract at the end of the year. You watch both those guys in the first round, they made a difference. And then you see Casey Mittelstadt. And Nathan McKinnon actually said the other day, you know, I know people are talking about me and they're talking about Kale. The best player we had in the first round was Casey Mittelstadt. So, you know, everybody was wondering, what's Mittelstadt going to do in Colorado in the playoffs? He's never been in a playoff game over the course of his career in Buffalo. It looks like he's doing just fine. Yeah. So I think management in Colorado at the trade deadline, and I talked about this on my podcast called The Eye Test with my partner, Jimmy Murphy. We talked about this at the trade deadline. I thought Colorado did the best job at the deadline accumulating assets, and you see them in the first round, it almost looks like they did. It really does.
Yeah. And then, of course, the All-Canadian series between Vancouver and Edmonton, and another team in Edmonton, just so much offensive firepower. I mean, Vancouver, I think in order to stop Edmonton, they've got to play the way they did against Nashville.
That's a great point. I would agree. The other thing, too, is there's still the goaltending situation. I know everybody's looking at Artur Seeloff, who is a third-string goalie going into this series, or the past series, I should say, for Vancouver. And then they got Casey DeSmith hurt. Obviously, Thatcher Demko got hurt, so they go to the number three guy, and he plays out of his mind and does a phenomenal job and gets them the win. In a six-game series. So I don't know what direction they're going to go. I've heard Thatcher Demko starting to make some progress. We'll see whether that translates. That series doesn't start till Wednesday, so that's good news for Vancouver. They needed a little rest because that was tough travel. They had really, really tough travel with Nashville and some injuries because of how hard that series was physically. But I'd say goaltending is going to be a big issue. Stuart Skinner impressed me, especially in game four in L.A. They won 1-0, Edmonton did, and they only had 13 shots on net. And I thought that Stuart Skinner played phenomenal in goal for the Oilers in that game four.
Well, I know the last time we talked, we discussed about the playoffs going, hopefully going back to a 1-8 format and recede after a while. Here's if if they receded after the first round, here's what the matchups would have been like. The Rangers against the Bruins. Rangers had 114 points. Bruins had 109. And then the Hurricanes would have taken on the Panthers. And then in the West, it would have been Colorado facing Vancouver, and then Edmonton taking on Dallas. I mean, I'd rather have the – you talk about – having a, they want the rivalry, but you talk about, you can have a great rivalry in that Eastern Conference there. The two Southern teams in Carolina and Florida, and then the Rangers and Bruins. That's a long time rivalry. That would have been a lot of fun in the second round.
See, I don't even have to add to that. I so agree with what you just said, Ken. That's been phenomenal, and I agree. I think at some point, the competition committee and the board of governors are going to have to look at this. You know, the truth is that we have some Vegas, the defending champs are out in the first round. I don't know how much of an appetite people have for that. Tampa Bay went to three straight Stanley Cup final, and they're out in the first round. Toronto's won one playoff series in the last 7 years. You know, I don't think that the league really wants to see that. I don't think the fans in some of those cities want to see that. So I think they've got to identify a better way of doing the playoff, especially the first round matchups.
Yeah, because they want this quote unquote bracket format. They want to, and I think, emulate the NCAA basketball tournament. But no, they had the best system from 1994 to about the early 2010s. And why they changed it, I'll never know. And I wish they would listen to the fans, but they don't seem to listen to the fans.
Well, I think there's going to be an appetite, because I do think there are a lot of managers, general managers, and I think there are a lot of coaches lobbying for a change of the playoff mechanism. You talked about it correctly, by the way. We wanted to go with the bracket system because of the success that has with the NCAA basketball tournament. And, you know, they do it in the NCAA hockey tournament. It's seemingly doing very well. But hockey's the NHL's a different animal. It really is. And I do think at some point there will be some subtle changes to it.
No. Well, Piero, I appreciate a few minutes of your insight. We'll do it again as we get to the conference finals.
It is my pleasure to join you. Thank you so much, Ken. Take care of yourself. Enjoy the playoffs, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Piero. Appreciate it. That's Piero McGuire, and we'll wrap up the podcast with the latest winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest and my picks for the conference semifinals. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Kenny Albert, the voice of the NHL on TNT, radio voice of the New York Rangers, and the NFL and Major League Baseball on Fox Sports as well. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast, let's go over my picks from the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I went 8-for-8. I can't believe it. I don't think I ever have gone 8-for-8 in the playoffs. And I actually got three of the picks accurately. I had Carolina winning in 5 over the Islanders. Dallas I had going winning in 7 over Vegas, and Edmonton in 5 over Los Angeles. So not too bad, shabby for me, because I'm usually bad at these picks. That's why I don't gamble. So here are my picks. I know the second round started Sunday, and I had these picks made before the second round started. I had Florida, even though they lost 5-1 to Boston on Monday night, I have Florida winning that series in 6 games. I have the Rangers taking out Carolina in 7. I think that's going to be a hard-fought series. And the Rangers won game 1 on Sunday, 4-3. Colorado and Dallas in the Western Conference, I like Colorado. I mean, they're a scoring machine. I think they're going to be tough to stop, and I think Dallas has had a really hard, emotional series of win against Vegas, and I don't know how much they have left in the tank. So I'm going with Colorado in 6. And Vancouver, Edmonton, I like Edmonton. I think they're another high-flying offensive team. Vancouver struggled to score goals against Nashville, and that series went 6 games. So I'm going Edmonton
in six. So we'll see how my picks turn out in the second round. The Week 12 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Dennis Furman of Hoosick Falls with 50 points. Dennis wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Dennis. The VIP winner was Jerry Peel of Frankensons with 40 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I'd like to thank Derek Witherford, Jerry McNamara, and Pierre McGuire for being on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.